Flip Palazzola, Reel 1. And if I could ask you, first of all, Flip, to tell me something about your life before the war. Whereabouts were you born and raised?
Well, I was born in St. Louis, Missouri, April of 1924, and spent my entire life here. Went to school, went to grade school, went to high school, and my time here was spent with my family. That was a particularly difficult time in the United States because the Depression was in full swing at this time. And being a child, I suppose I never realized that things weren't as good as they could have been because everyone was in the same situation. So I'm born of a Depression baby, so to speak, a Depression child. And I've carried a lot of those traits with me with the rest of my life. I'm very conservative. Don't like to spend a lot of money. but I do enjoy life. I really have enjoyed my life. Yeah.
Do you think there's something about people who were brought up or experienced the Depression in America which separates you out from the other generations?
I seriously think that is true. I know it's true because I can speak to people from my generation and they all have the same ideas. Things were tough. You didn't get everything you wanted. You may not have had the new pair of shoes. Summertime, you might go barefooted, which was fine. It was enjoyable. But I think that there were so many people that were in that situation that it was inbred into us almost that we were not to be materialistic people because there wasn't material things around for us to take advantage of. I know my father worked hard. My father was a shoemaker. St. Louis, during that period, was one of the centers in the United States of women's shoes. And so that was the job that he had. And, of course, as that started to dwindle, as people wore their shoes longer and longer, he was no longer needed. And he started making, making is the wrong thing, he started preparing different kind of foods that could be sold at restaurants, which there were very few, but in taverns. One of the things he made that was kind of interesting and sold a lot of were the pickled pig's feet. Now, that may sound strange, but a lot of people really enjoyed the pickled pig's feet. This, of course, happened after the Prohibition had been repealed, and so he sold a lot of them to the taverns. So he was selling pickles and ketchup and mayonnaise and pickled pig's feet to the taverns.
How about your education?
I really have a limited education, actually. I went through the eighth grades of the elementary school, graduated with that. I'm trying to think of the year. I suppose it must have been about 1938-39, in that period is when I graduated, and I went to a high school at that time. During that period, when I was going to high school, I became very interested in electronics. I did a lot of experimental work on my own in our basement, and I was intrigued with electronics. I built my own crystal sets. And I remember something that was kind of interesting. At that time, the old Ford automobiles used what was known as spark coils. And you could always get these sparks. Somebody always had some of these things. They worked off of a battery. But what they did, they produced a very high voltage, very low current, but very high voltage. And I remember that the fluorescent lights were coming in at that time. And I would pick up some of the old fluorescent lights that were used and were taken out because they put new ones in. And I would take and have a lot of fun with these because I could hold this light and hold one hand on this high voltage and make the light light in my hand. So I was like a Darth Vader with my at that time. But it was I was so intrigued with electricity and electronics and radio that that's how I ended up where I am now. I went to a technical school as part of high school and learned. At that time, they just called it radio, but it really was the beginnings of electronics. And I got all of the electronic, all the basics of electronic, the scientific parts of electronics, and that was built into my mind then, and it still is there. It's kind of strange. I still use some of that. My son, being involved in the business with me, he is interested in electronics. And I still, from my memory, I designed some little tube amplifiers for him to build. And he built them. And he amazed me. He did such a fantastic job with these. He's selling them now for $1,500. At that time, they were just, you know, just things in my mind. But going on from that, I guess it was about 1939, I started working in an appliance store, and it was doing repair work on the radios that were coming in. Radios was all we had. Of course, there was no television then. Even FM wasn't around yet, so it was just radio. And so I was doing repair work for this gentleman.
Were things picking up? You know, were you aware of the New Deal, Roosevelt's New Deal?
Mm-hmm.
Was that important for America, you know, from your own experience?
I think it probably was. Yes, I think it, National Recovery Act, I believe that's what it was, the NRA. And they were able to generate jobs through this. And also with the CCC, they were able to put a lot of people to work doing public works. And, of course, that generated more money into the economy, and that brought the economy up. So, yes, things were getting better. Mm-hmm. Yes, we had a new automobile in this period. My father was, again, back at the shoe factory working on shoes, making women's shoes. And so we were able to survive with that.
Have been aware at this time of sort of international events, you know, Nazism, what was happening in Europe or even Asia as a young chap, you know, in St. Louis?
No, I wouldn't say that I was that aware of it. I do remember when Hitler invaded Poland, September of 1939, that was kind of a startling event to me. However, I wasn't involved. I wasn't with the army or anything at that time. But I was cognizant of the problem going on in Europe. How it would affect us, I guess I didn't really anticipate.
Did you hear much about sort of Britain in the war from 39 to 41? You know, until America entered the war, were you aware that, you know, that they were having a tough time, the British? Did you get much coverage of it?
Yes, we did. Newspapers gave us very good coverage, and radio also, our radio newscasters. And yes, we were, at least I know I was very aware of what was happening in Britain and France and what Hitler was doing with his armies and with his blitzkrieg activities. It was amazing to me that he could just come in and take over a country so easily. I guess prior to 39, I had a little idea of what Hitler was doing with Franco in Spain and how that had helped his Stuka divers, his bomb divers, helped him with his blitzkrieg later on when he went and started taking over the rest of Europe. So, yes, I was aware of that.
Did you think that America would enter the war before Pearl Harbor? You know, did it enter your consciousness that you might be involved, or you ought to be involved?
I think probably yes. I would say yes. I was not an isolationist. I felt there was something going on that we definitely would become involved with. It would be with Europe. No idea at all of anything with Japan at that time. But with Europe, I thought certainly we would. We were doing a lot of things at that time. Our lend-lease with Britain was active, and we were supporting Britain, although we were supposed to be neutral, but I think we supported them a lot.
So Pearl Harbor, I suppose, is the next big event. Do you remember that at all, Flip?
Oh, yes. Yes. It was a Sunday afternoon when I heard it, and I was out with some of my friends, and we were, as I remember, we were at that time using streetcar trolley cars, I had heard about it just about that time that we were on there, and I was thinking, you know, the war has started. And being, at that time, I was 15, as I remember, 15 or 16, and I thought, I'm going to become involved with this, whether I want to or not. And I felt that my training in electronics would certainly be beneficial to me and to whatever job I was doing.
You were saying about the Japanese that you had no awareness of what, you know, was happening. So, you know, was it a total shock when that happened?
It was to me. I think it was to a lot of people in the United States, because we were trading partners with Japan. We were selling them materials. We were selling them a lot of our iron, and they were using it to make their war machine to attack us.
Were there any Japanese in this area?
Very few, very few. I don't remember seeing any. I know some people that were living here at that time, and I remember their parents were interred during that period, and that was very traumatic for them. But at that time, no.
So when did the war sort of impinge on you? You know, you were saying you would have been how old when this started?
Probably
1924.
About
yes, and
well,
you know, did it affect your life immediately?
Yes, yes, it did. With the electronics training that I had, I guess when I turned 17. I was contacted, I remember the exact situation, but by the government, because of my electronic training prior to this. And they were setting up training schools for radar equipment at that time. And they called it pre-radar. It was prior to radar. And because of my background in electronics, my schooling, and my knowledge, they sent me to special schools as government. I was like a civil service employee, working for the government. And what they were doing was teaching us all this new thing, radar. At that time, it was new. I believe that the English had been using that since 1939. On a different system than what we were using. They were using much lower frequencies. We were using very extremely high frequencies. And so it was a whole new inventions that we had to develop, whole new things that we had to develop because we were working with these extremely high frequencies. And I was involved with that. I went to school at Illinois Institute of Technology, IIT, in Chicago. Then the practical hands-on thing, they sent me to Philadelphia, and we worked on and learned about the equipment there. And then actually from there I went to Marshfield in California which was a long way off. I remember when I left Philadelphia, it was sleeting and terrible, miserable weather. It was in March. And we get out to California. It was so gorgeous. I thought, this is paradise. And we were learning how to the optimum position of the antennas for this radar equipment. What we were doing was it's called IFF, identification of friend or foe. And we were working and developing that kind of a system, which was a triggering system, putting it rather simply how it worked. The radar station on the ground would send a signal out. This signal would bounce off of the aircraft and return to them. And then they would know then that there was an aircraft there. If there was nothing there, nothing would bounce back. So you knew that there was something up there in the air. Well, what was happening, the Germans, the Luftwaffe, was following the bombers back into England. And when they would follow them, they would be almost in their formations. It was dark. You can't tell that much, And they would follow them. Then they would attack the bases. Well, the radar equipment would show that there were planes, but they didn't know who belonged to who, And so this IFF was a means of identifying that. The signal from the ground station would be intercepted in this equipment that we were developing, and it would send back its own little signal that was triggered by the radar signal. Well, that would put a little blip on the radar screen so they would know that they were ours. So they were friends. They had IFF, identification of friend or foe. So that's what that system was. Well, I'm probably getting a little ahead of myself. Well, what was happening when planes were shot down over Germany or had to be left in Germany, the Germans saw this equipment and they figured out a little bit about what this thing was doing. And they would take some and put them in their planes. Now, we just couldn't tell again whose were ours, whose were theirs, which planes were which. And so we developed a code system. We had six codes, and the pilot, at the time that he took off, the bombers took off, or the fighters, they had this code in an envelope. And then they would not know what that code was until they took off. They would open that, and then they would set one of these six positions. So that at that point, when our signal would go there, it would only react to that particular one. So again, we knew which planes were which. So I was very involved, I was enthusiastic about this. I thought, I'm trying to save lives instead of killing people. And it made me feel really like I was doing something that was more important to save our people rather than to destroy our enemies. I think that was kind of a thing that kind of set in.
Does that mean you had sort of pacifist leanings? That, you didn't want to kill people?
Yes. I'm still that way. So, in this training that I was doing at Marchfield, it was getting close to me being inducted into the Army. So I asked them to send me back closer to St. Louis because I would have had to pay my own way. And I didn't want to do that from California back to St. Louis. So they sent me to Dayton, Ohio. It was a big right field with a big Army Air Force base there. And so I was there and doing some of the work there with this kind of equipment. While I was there, I developed a system that they were using. They started to use of crimping the wires on connectors that went into the equipment, and instead of having to solder each one individually, we were able to crimp the wires and make the contacts. And it was a lot faster. It was a lot easier to do. We didn't do any damage to the wires or to the equipment. So I felt good about helping develop that.
Yes, it would seem at this time there was plenty, as you were saying, radar was so new, the British had had it, but on the lower frequency. So it would seem there was plenty of scope for experimentation and innovation, which must have been wonderful for someone like yourself.
Yes,
is that right?
It was, yes. So as I got close to being inducted, drafted, I went to the base commander at Wright Field, and I explained what my history was, and he had that available to him. In working with this kind of equipment. And I said, I just don't want to go into the infantry. I said, can you give me a letter of recommendation that I can give to the commanding officer where I'm being inducted, which was Jefferson Barracks, Missouri. And so he gave me that. So when I got my induction notice, I came back to St. Louis. I went to Jefferson Barracks. I got inducted. I was sworn into the Army. I was given all of my clothing and everything. I gave this information to the commanding officer. He immediately cut orders for me, and I went right back to the same job that I was doing before in Dayton, Ohio. And so I was then into the electronics things. Well, I had to become part of a company, and that company was the 889th Signal Company, which was Signal Corps. It wasn't Air Corps, it was Signal Corps. At that time, at the beginning of the war, the Air Corps was part of the Signal Corps. It wasn't a force by themselves. And the reason for that was carryover from World War I, when the Signal Corps did all of the reconnaissance work with airplanes and that sort of thing. And so the Air Corps then was part of the Signal Corps. Well, Air Corps obviously outgrew us leaps and bounds, but we were attached to them then. And I was sent to New Orleans from Dayton, Ohio, to New Orleans Army Air Base. And I was there, I would say, probably 5 months. And went through my basic training, learned how to be a soldier, how to protect myself. I can remember we used to have to go out on a bivouac, and one of the things we had to do was to dig foxholes. And of course, when we were in the southern part of the United States, which was heavily forested with pine trees, and we would dig down, and the sap would come out of the pine trees. And we were kids at heart, you know, and we would light it. We would have our own little light and fire in our foxholes. It was just one of those silly things that you do, you know. Well, finally then, we got our orders to be shipped out. And we went to Boston. And we were only in Boston a very few days. I would say probably less than a week. And we were then sent to Rhode Island, I can't think of the Providence, Rhode Island, where we were embarked for England. And we were on a Liberty ship, which was a cark in the ocean.
Could you describe a Liberty ship?
Liberty ship is a very small merchant ship. I say small, it was small compared to a lot of ships that I've seen. I don't know how many there were, probably, I would say probably 2,000 of us on the ship. But it was a very small ship. As a result, your bunks that they put were five high. So you had five different ones. And of course, this we went over in December. We shipped off out of Providence December the 7th. It was, I remember that's the one, because it was Pearl Harbor Day.
What year would that have been, Flip?
43. Yeah. And so this, we were on this Liberty ship, and quarters were extremely, extremely close quarters. Everybody was getting sick. It was horrible smells. Nobody wanted to eat. In fact, the mess where we ate was a very long table. And you would get your food at one end on a tray and then walk along this table eating. You better be finished by the time you got to the end because there was no place to go. So, but luckily, or unluckily, a lot of people weren't eating much. It was not a good experience. And we were in a large convoy, and I don't know how many ships were in the convoy, but we could see them way out from us. And we were escorted by United States destroyers. And there was one cruiser that was part of this. It was a large, large contingent of boats. And we could watch these other Liberty ships. And the North Atlantic in the winter is rough. And we could see that half the time the screws, the propellers on the boats were out of the water. They were bobbing up and down. And we're thinking, those poor guys, and the same thing was happening to us. So we arrived in England, I believe we came into Glasgow in Scotland, and came through that way, and then we were put on trains and went to where our base was. It was kind of strange, although our group was a technical group, we were one of the first ones to get what we called combat gear. We had heavy coats, we had heavy shoes. Up to that time, we had to have our shoes polished, you know, everything had to be spick and span. Well, they gave us these heavy shoes that were buckskin, so we didn't have to polish them. We thought that was really neat. And they gave us sidearms, not of guns, but of knives. Each one of us got a knife, and I thought, you know, this is really strange. We're coming to a friendly country, and we're carrying knives, you know. But we didn't have guns. They didn't give us any guns, just the knives. But we had this rugged-looking outfit, and we come to this Air Force base with all of the pilots and the crew members, and they're all spick and span. They're all nice-looking, having a fun life, and they see us, and they thought they were scared of us.
Well, was the base already established when you arrived?
Yes, it was. The name of the base was Wattisham. Wattisham.
How do you
say it? It was Wattisham, I believe. I'm not
Wattisham. Wattisham.
It was about 12 miles northeast of Ipswich, and that's where I spent my entire period there. We were at that base.
And what was your first impression of England as you sort of drove along in your train?
Much different than the United States to us. Really didn't. We didn't see anything that was out of the ordinary. I don't have a lot of recollection of that. It was just a very short trip. But we were glad to be on ground, on solid ground again.
And your base at Wattisham, could you describe it? You know what it consisted of?
Well, it was a number of Quonset huts that we lived in. And it was a number of hangars where the aircraft was serviced. It did have concrete runways. They were there. The aircraft at this particular base that we were at were all fighter aircraft. We had P-51s, P-38s, and P-47s. These were the aircraft at our base.